Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Welcome, everyone. At this time, when we are really, as a nation, in shock still from the atrocities that happened in Christchurch, it's difficult for people because wherever they turn, whatever the media they switch on, it's all saturation point. And I guess people are still trying to process what has shook the nation and what has shattered our sense of peace and security. But at the same time, it raises many questions in terms of processes and planning that we have in place for community safety. And so on this occasion, I'd like to just first of all say that as a person who's born in Christchurch and having been through the support process and the recovery process for the Christchurch earthquakes, you know, I have some sense of being able to comment on emergency management issues. Frontline people who step in after a disaster do have experience, and it is relevant in a case like this. But as your host today, I'm Anne-Marie Currie from Auckland Grey Power. So I'm wearing a number of hats. I'm also an elected representative on the Pukitipapa local board, and it's sort of part of the board responsibilities to comment on emergency management plans that the council has and give feedback to the governing body. And we've been in the process recently. One of the things that I noticed was there was very little, if any, reference to disabled people or seniors, and yet they're the people often the most vulnerable and the most affected in any disaster, as we found in Christchurch. So that was quite disturbing to me. But since Friday, I've sat in a number of meetings at council, including one of the seniors' advisory panel, where they were being briefed on the emergency management document. And it occurred to everyone in the room that all these documents are going to have to be completely revised in the light of Friday's atrocities, because there is no reference to terrorism or that is a possible disaster situation. What sort of organisations might be in assistance for recovery? what kinds of support processes might be needed, etc., etc.? In the current draft plan, there is mention of pets. There is mention of children. And that's why it's surprising there's no mention of the vulnerable at the other end of the lifespan. There's also in the document no mention of gathering places, because in the past there have been maps and there have been places cited as the place to go in an emergency, head for your local community centre or whatever, and it's marked on the map. Now they're taking the approach that they don't want to be too definitive in case they're sending people to what could be a potentially disastrous location for whatever reasons, that location would be inappropriate. And so to have it marked on a map as the place to go would then be confusing to people. So they're actually not putting maps out with dots like that anymore. However, people are still in the dark as to what sort of places they might go to and where they might head to. So that's a conversation that's needed to be had at the community level, and particularly in schools with children, who will often inform families or lead families to the right locations or the best locations. The role of marae will need to be more widely understood, because very often in disasters, particularly local disasters, they are the central factor in providing support, accommodation and so on. They're providing accommodation for the homeless now in some cases, like we have in Auckland. But, for example, when five roads, all the major roads in the central North Island, were all closed due to snow, and people were dug out of their cars covered in snow. In those situations, they were taken to local marae. Because they have a storehouse of mattresses and bedding, because they have catering facilities that are up to restaurant standard, because they are now brought up to accessibility standards in the, under the building code, there's been a whole rebuilding program and a regenerative program to make sure that they're up to standard. And there's over 1,000 of them throughout the country. They form the backbone of a very substantial support network. And people there are used to dealing with large crowds. They're used to hundreds, if not thousands, of people coming for a tangi. And they can, I guess, not dance on a sixpence, but they can mobilise people. And they're used to dealing with what is required in terms of having a good, thorough, organised system. So there's not chaos, there's calm and everything's ordered. And that's what people need under these kinds of conditions. So it will be interesting to see whether in fact their role is articulated more fully in these plans, because it should be. It should be understood by people generally. And I think there are more people now in the mainstream population have visited Marae on a number of occasions more than before, and so those kind of divisions in society are getting broken down and people are more familiar with what Marae's do and where their local one is. So I think that there will be more developments in this space. And going back to the emergency management document, the current draft plan is yet to go to the full governing body. It's still working its way through various committees and local board meetings. So it will be very interesting to see what they do now, how they revise it, whether they actually halt the process and look at doing a revision before, in fact, continuing with the current draft, or whether they decide to pass the current draft anyway and then go back and do a tweaking of it in the next year. So it will be a very interesting situation for us all to watch and have input into. And I suggest that if you have strong views about this, that you talk to your local reps, your community leaders and local councillors, because these are the people, particularly the local councillors, who will be making decisions, and these are the people who need to know your thoughts and your concerns. I'm going to switch to some music now. This is something to acknowledge the grief of the nation. It's still light and it's not too heavy, but it was a Buddy Holly track, Raining in My Heart, so I hope that this will help just soothe people at this time.
The sun is out, the sky is blue, there's not a cloud to spoil the view, but it's raining, raining in my heart. The weatherman says clear today, he doesn't know you've gone away, and it's raining, raining in my heart. Oh, misery, misery, what's gonna become of me? I tell my blues they mustn't show, but soon these tears are bound to flow, 'cause it's raining, raining in my heart. But it's raining, raining in my heart. and it's raining, raining in my heart. Oh, misery, misery. What's gonna become of me? I tell my blues they mustn't show, but soon these tears are bound to flow, 'cause it's raining, raining in my heart.
Welcome back, everyone, and it's Anne-Marie Currie, and I'm talking about emergency management today in our session. And so far, I've been articulating a little bit about the draft emergency management plan. When I was at the seniors advisory panel on Monday, and I listened to some of the contributions of the members there and their response to the staff who were presenting this draft emergency management plan, what I actually was interested in hearing was some of the feedback from one of the members saying that she had been in contact with a former mayor of Palmerston North, Heather Tange, and Heather's comments to her about this draft plan, and because all the documentation's online, people can see it, her comments, Heather's comments were that they'd suffered a number of floods in the Manawatū, and after the first tragic one, where even a council worker was killed trying to get people out, they realised that they didn't have a clear system for identifying who was vulnerable, where there were people living alone who would struggle to get out, where there were people who were in unusual circumstances, disabled, that needed considerable help. They would need to be carried out on a stretcher. Where there were people, large numbers of seniors living where there were lifts. Because, of course, if there's any disruption in power supply, they won't be able to be got out easily. So they did an analysis of exactly what the senior sector needed, where the people were living. They actually did surveys. They actually located a lot of these people because they're less likely to be moving house than the mainstream part of the population. They're moving less frequently, and so getting a fairly robust survey done made sense. Along with the data that they collected, they tried to assess what the social context of this person was in each case, whether they had family who could assist them with the recovery process over the subsequent weeks. And of course, many didn't have anyone at all. And just as in the Christchurch earthquake, where I found, and I asked, where is your nearest relative? They would say London, New York, anywhere but local in New Zealand. So understanding your population is really important in any emergency management plan, and showing that you've understood this population and its needs and how you, what the assistance is likely to be available and where the gaps are and what kinds of additional support are needed. All this is critical analysis that has to be done. And at the moment, we're not seeing signs of this having been attended to in Auckland. So there is an important need to get something underway that's robust. I know that other cities have managed this, and of course it's easier when you've got a smaller population. Auckland's population is a disadvantage, but when we look at outlying islands, for example, Great Barrier has a very high concentration of seniors. Waiheke too has quite a substantial number, And now we have a growing senior population right across the region. We have certain areas that are reaching quite high concentrations, like the Whangaparaoa Peninsula, the Hibiscus Coast. Even Remuera in the Eastern Bays has quite a high concentration of seniors. The councillor Leslie Simpson from that area has been very aware of that in the whole time she has been on the council, and previously when she was chair of the local board there. So certain of our elected reps are in touch with the needs, and we need to make sure in Grey Power that we step up our advocacy in this space and do more. And I understand that the meeting that's going ahead with the mayor on Friday from representatives of the senior sector, that includes Age Concern reps, includes Grey Power reps and other interested parties, and that meeting, one of the topics will be raised will be emergency management. I intend to bring some people's expertise and background onto the program to actually address this again, that we're only just skimming the surface this morning. But I think it's important that people understand what good practice is in this field, what other cities are doing and have done, and then people are better equipped to hold conversations with their reps and take the issues up. Because I think it's going to take quite a hammering to get the points across. I don't think the thinking has been realistic or practical. It's what is contained in the document is not wrong. It's just that it doesn't go far enough in certain ways. For example, in Japan, they are very, very super organised. They're great planners. And post their earthquakes, they've learned a lot of lessons and they've incorporated that into planning. But they already have a high degree of awareness about seniors. They have probably the largest senior population over 100 in the world, in any nation, and it's still rapidly growing, as is the population between 80 and 100. So they have communities that where almost 90% of the community are seniors. So they're very over this kind of issue, but then they are fastidious in the way they plan, and they're very caring as a society. They have a very strong caring ethic, and that's built into their thinking. We tend to be more focused on how much will it cost and how little money we can spend and how much we can get away with. And our focus isn't always, is largely requiring volunteers to pick up the pieces and fill in the gaps. Now, volunteering is done largely by seniors. So when you get a major disaster like the Christchurch earthquake, you find some seniors working overtime, volunteering even more, but you find there are insufficient people to fill these gaps. And that's why it's very important we don't just focus on volunteers, and we don't ignore the contribution that we have from seniors, because some of our regular services, like the reception at the hospital, Meals on Wheels, some of our regular services rely on seniors. But if they are out of action because of injury in a disaster, they won't be doing those jobs. So, you know, we need to think very carefully about all the ramifications of how this population contributes in society, the roles they play, and what happens if they're not playing those roles, and who is actually going to look after them. And those are the questions that we're currently not thinking about. And I would suggest that the invisibility of seniors in our plans and our thinking only reflects the way people are in society generally. So out of sight, out of mind, and what we need to do is change the frame of reference, and we need to become more inclusive. There are a number of events coming up which I want to draw attention to for those people who are keen to know what Grey Power's doing and also what's happening in the community for seniors. And so I just want to say at this point that April's a busy month, as we've got Easter and Anzac there, and there'll be lots of people going to Anzac services, and this year, Grey Powers decided that we will actually do a wreath. We looked at doing one last year for some of the services in Central Auckland, and we were rather concerned at $140 per wreath. We were thinking, well, this is an awful lot of money to spend, that our members would rather see it spent in other ways that would bring more tangible results for seniors. So while it's important symbolically, we weren't really wanting to spend that kind of money. But this year we've got some people willing to create wreaths out of paper and other materials, wool and crochet and roses or whatever, poppies, just so that we can have something tangible that will be in the ceremonies. And so some of us committee members are going to different services. I always go to the Ranfurly House, the Seniors Retirement Centre, which is for the veterans, and I always go to that service. It's a particularly special service, and I've always found it very worthwhile attending. And it's quite moving, actually, so I like to go to that one. But there will be other ones that other people will attend of their own free will. And so they will just wear their Grey Power badge. But if you do see any Grey Power committee members at the ANZAC services, do speak to them and make yourself known. And if you want to become a member, or you're already a member, you know, please have a chat with them. Now, in addition, in April, we have our main meeting on the 5th of April at 1 p.m. at the Brockhouse Bay Community Centre, and that meeting is on housing. It's on the housing crisis and seniors being the hidden part of the housing crisis. So we're actually going to be talking to Deborah Russell, the local MP. We're going to be having people from social housing providers who provide for those seniors who rent and don't own their own place, and they're on the increase. So they're about 30% of seniors now, and they've got obviously problems about security of tenure. They don't want to keep moving around every year. They've got problems with access and damp places and so on. So the new legislation will help them, but they've also then got a lot of negotiations with landlords to do, which is stressful at the best of times. So there are a number of issues about people who want to build a granny flat onto their place so that they can rent their house out and get income to pay perhaps for a partner who's in care. That can be up to $7,000 a month. That can be very expensive, and so they don't want to sell their house, but they're slightly above the threshold, and so they have to do something creative to solve the problem. So we'll be hearing from people who've experienced this and who've reached agreements with council and who've actually negotiated, and there are ways of doing it so that the resource consent is not crippling, and it's important people have information about this. So all of this will be the subject of our meeting on the 5th of April. So we do hope that you get there, and it's at 1 o'clock, and Brockhouse Bay has 5 bus routes coming in there, and plenty of parking behind the hall. So we look forward to seeing you. Now, before we finish, I would also like to just say that in May we're going to have a very busy month, because on the 3rd of May is our ordinary meeting at 1 o'clock, and then on the 25th of May we have an AGM where we will elect a new committee, and of course all the roles come up for election at that time. So it becomes very important that we have good people who can do the work and who can keep the work going that's already in train. And so we need people there to carry out the voting and to ensure that we get a committee that we deserve and need. So I welcome you to that. And that's on Saturday at 1:30 at Brockhouse Bay Community Centre. And we've made it on a Saturday on purpose because we have a lot of people working during the week, and we also have a lot of people joining Grey Power who are still not yet retired. They're in their early 60s, but they're looking to understand more about the sector and about how they will transition on their journey into older age. And so they're joining us now, so they're abreast of things. And we welcome all of those people to come to the AGM and contribute their ideas and to vote. Now, doing radio shows like this at a time when there's a major event happens, it's very salutary, I suppose, that we get to comment on these things. And I know that a lot of our seniors have experienced war, they've experienced their lives being turned upside down much more than the event on Friday has done for us. But they will be aware of a heightened sense of security issues. They'll be aware of their own experiences in the past and in World War II and the post aftermath of that. And I know some of our members are in their late 80s and in their late 90s, and they've got very vivid memories because they were young people in their teens when this was happening. And so we just want to say, look, it's fine to reminisce and talk about things and bring things up. And it is important to share your stories, and that's why we've got the Stories Project going, whereby people are working on how they're going to tell their stories, not just about war, but about any significant part of their life. But stories that take on values and illustrate lasting commitment to building a society of worth. And on that note, we'll have some music, some jazz music from one of my favourite tracks, Jazz at Midnight. And I hope you enjoy that, and we will be with you again next Sunday.
together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.